And I appreciate all who have been minded to come to the meeting tonight. We'll make you welcome, and the remaining nights are known to you up until Friday, each night at 8 o'clock in the will of the Lord. Our reading will still be from the book of Deuteronomy, and tonight, commencing in chapter 5, again, a very selective reading. Deuteronomy and chapter 5, commencing at verse 1. And Moses called all Israel and said unto them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your ears this day, that ye may learn them, and keep and do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord made not this covenant with our fathers, but with us, even us, who are all of us here alive. This day the Lord talked with you face to face in the mount, out of the midst of the fire. And then you can see at a glance in the middle section of the chapter, we have the Ten Commandments, verse 22. These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mount out of the midst of the fire, of the cloud, and of the thick darkness with a great voice. And he added no more, and he wrote them in two tables of stone and delivered them unto me. Chapter 6. And verse 4, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house, and on thy gates. Chapter 7, verse 1, When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them, neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son, for they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. Verse 5, But thus shall ye deal with them, ye shall destroy their altars, break down their images, and cut down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. For thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Now verse 17, If thou shalt say in thine heart, These nations are more than I, how can I dispossess them? Thou shalt not be afraid of them, but shalt well remember what the Lord thy God did unto Pharaoh and unto all Egypt. Verse 22, The Lord thy God will put out those nations before thee by little and little. Thou mayest not consume them at once, lest the beasts of the field increase upon thee. Chapter 8, verse 10, When thou hast eaten and art full, then shalt thou bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God. Verse 17, And thou shalt say in thine heart, My power and the might of my hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. In chapter 9, the Lord reminds him at the beginning about the Anakims that they will destroy. Verse 4, Speak not thou in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, For my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord doth drive them out before thee. Not for thy righteousness, or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go to possess their land, But for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand therefore that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. Remember and forget not how thou provokedst the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness, and so on. The rest of chapter 9 is taken up with those provocations, and into chapter 10. Now chapter 10 and verse 12. And now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command thee this day for thy good. Finally, chapter 11. Chapter 11 for a final extract. Verse 10. The land whither thou goest in to possess it is not as the land of Egypt from whence ye come out, where thou sowedst thy seed and wateredst it with thy fruit as a garden of herbs. But the land whither ye go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven. A land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. And it shall come to pass, if ye shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Now, that's again lengthy readings. We trust the Lord's blessing, and that we might have helped for at least some understanding of the general thrust of these particular important chapters. There's a word that we often use, particularly in our gospel preaching, and I think it's a word that can very well be written across the book of Deuteronomy. It is the word opportunity. In actual fact, that word opportunity in itself is an interesting word. It has a Latin background. You can almost discern the background by looking at the word. It's made up of a couple of Latin words which really mean towards the port. And the background to the word is that in ancient times, when, of course, sailing vessels had no engine or the like and were driven by the wind and the sails, the sailor had to catch the wind when it was blowing towards the port. And if he did not catch the wind when it was blowing, he missed the chance to get his boat into the harbour. The wind could drop, or the wind could change, so that when the wind was blowing up port, blowing opposite the port, the sailor had to take advantage of the breeze that was in the right direction. In spiritual life, of course, it is very much the same. We tell sinners that when the breeze of God's grace is blowing softly and favorably in their direction, they should strive to enter in. And the same is true of Christians. There can come an opportunity in a Christian's life. I think particularly those opportunities come in the experience of younger believers. God would send certain influences of advantage, like a wind blowing in their direction favorably. And if the young believer seizes the opportunity, he will make headway. Should he miss the opportunity, he could remain for years in the shallow waters of wasted time. You see, as far as the people to whom Moses was speaking were concerned, they had an opportunity. Moses was a little bit apprehensive that they might miss it. And the reason that he was apprehensive they might miss it was simply this, that their predecessors had an equal opportunity, but they missed it. And he tells them, this was last night's meeting particularly, I'll just mention it so that we can move on. He says, you remember that your fathers came to Kadesh Barnea. And he said they were on the very edge of everything that God wanted them to enjoy. They were at the south of the land and at the edge, but he said they missed it. The time was ripe. The grapes were juicy. The promises were sure. But he said they missed it. And they never made it. 40 years later, 38 years later, they still hadn't made it. Do you see how precious the opportunity was and how serious it was when it was missed? Now, the next generation, the generation that are listening to Moses, they haven't come to Kadesh Barnea. But they have come round a different direction, just to the very banks of the River Jordan, and they are in the plains of Moab. It's their last pitching place. And the land of Canaan, mouth-wateringly, just lies across the Jordan River. And they are poised. These people are poised. In the plains of Moab, they are poised for a glorious future. You say they're just a river breath from it. They couldn't miss it. They're bound to get it. There's no way it could ever be forfeited. Moses says, take it easy. He said, because your fathers were just as close as you are. And he said, you need to watch that you don't miss your opportunity in the second generation as they missed their opportunity in the first generation. He said, I have to go. I can't stay with you. But he said, before I go, I'm going to try and give you a number of messages that will seek to establish the fact that you don't make the same mistake as they made. They were at a crisis point. They were at a point of choice at Kadesh Barnea. You are at a point of choice in the plains of Moab. And he said, this choice is going to determine the rest of your future. Maybe I've a kind of way thought this. I may be altogether misguided, I don't know. But I have had a thought in my mind that I've been speaking to one or two believers in Blue River who are at a point of choice. Just this week. And the choice that you will make in this stage of your spiritual experience will make or break your future. Maybe there's someone here, you're not in the plains of Moab, but you're in the place of decision. And you're at a time of opportunity. And may God grant that even through the ministry of Moses and the teaching of the book of Deuteronomy, you may grasp principles that would enable you to make the right choice. Sadly, as Moses was preaching, and this was one of the things that keeps resurfacing throughout his messages, he refers to it quite a few times. It seemed to break his heart. He almost said to the people, just take a little look over the hill. They couldn't quite see it from the plains of Moab. The lush, beautiful plains of Moab. But if they had just taken a little look over the southwestern hill, they would have seen a large stretch of wilderness that was absolutely littered by carcasses. And he says, I don't want you to be like them. You know, dear Christians, not everybody that broke bread made it. Not every young man and every young sister whom the brethren interviewed and seemed to have great potential for the future actually realized that potential. We look across the wilderness of Christian testimony to the point that we have reached tonight, and I am sorry to tell you that it's absolutely littered with carcasses. People that had great potential as these folks had, Moses' heart seems to beat. Oh, he said, as I look upon a new generation, it makes my heart rejoice. He said, I can think of your exploits in the land of Canaan. Oh, he said, go for it. But he said, while I am very optimistic and positive, he said, I am realistic enough to know that there are dangers and there are difficulties. And may God grant that we might realize something of our spiritual potential. Now, As I said last night, and I don't want to spend another minute at all on that old material, the one essential is that they walk in God's paths. He says, as God moves, you'll have to move. And he said, as God moves along in the stage of experience, you'll have to move with him. He said, your fathers didn't do that. They turned around. And he said, they lost it. You'll have to learn the walk in God's path. That was the material before us last night. Tonight, from chapter 6 through to the end of chapter 11, chapter 5 to the end of chapter 11, Moses is emphasizing the witness of God's people. Now he said, you people need to remember. And he said, this will help you. If you constantly keep in mind that God has brought you out of Egypt, it's his intention to bring you into Canaan, that you might be a special people. We read that expression actually in chapter 7. God intends that you should be a special people above all the peoples of the earth. He said, God wants you to be a distinctive people. He wants you to be a different people. You take the word special, because sometimes we run over these words and we maybe don't give them the full space they ought to have. Take the link between the word special and the word species. Now that's what God wanted them to be, a new species. A spiritual species of people. Altogether different from the nations that surrounded them. And he said, a special people unto me. Of course, you know it hasn't changed one iota. Because that's what God wants us to be. A special people for him. So that when the other peoples of the earth look on us, they would be asking questions. And they would be saying, why are those people so different? That's what God... You say that God had no interest in the other peoples of the world. Did God elect the nation of Israel because he couldn't give 2 cents about the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites and the Philistines? Did God not care tuppence about those other nations, and he had a special election program for Israel and let the rest go to scrap? No such thing. No such thing. God intended to have Israel so different that the other nations of the world would say, do you see the way they talk? Do you see how happy they are? Do you see the blessings they enjoy? They don't live like us, and yet they're so happy. And God expected these people to be so distinct and different that the other nations would sit up and take notice. The children of Israel were to become a showcase nation, a model nation, a missionary nation. And you say, well, what does God expect the other nations to do? He expected the other nations then to join them. To join them. Well, you say, but sure, you couldn't get a Moabite in amongst the, you couldn't get a Moabite in amongst the people of God. Are you sure? Are you absolutely sure? Well, I can tell you about one at least. And she turned out to be a good one. But you say you couldn't get a Canaanite in amongst the people of God. No matter how much they wanted to join them, a Canaanite could never get amongst the children. Well, I can tell you about one at least, and she was a rascal. God expects us to be such a showcase people, not a headcase people, but to be a showcase people that all the folks around Blue River would be absolutely gobsmacked and say, do you see the way those people live? We would love to join them. Some Christians, they live in such a way that people want to go 40 miles away. And they say, if that's the way those people and argue and live and debate and treat each other, I don't want to touch them with a barge pole. And of course the children of Israel, and I better not get carried away with this, in their later history, instead of being different from the other nations, instead of being dignified in their testimony, instead of being distinct in their behavior, they just started to become a bunch of copycats. And they became like the Edomites, and they became like the Ammonites, and they became like the Moabites, and they started to marry the Philistines and go to the Philistine parties and all that kind of thing, and they just lost their whole power and they lost their witness. So that Moses says in chapters 5 to 11, he said, now this will help you This will help you to achieve your full potential if you keep in mind that God expects you to be a special people, a witness for Him to the other nations of the world. A witness to what? Well, there are a number of references in these chapters. I didn't highlight them tonight, but you can look at them at your own leisure. There are a number of adjectives that are used right here in this section of Deuteronomy to describe God. He's described as a jealous God, as the one God, as a faithful God, as a merciful God, as a great and mighty God. That's what God wanted them to be, a witness to His oneness. All these other nations, they had 40 gods. They had a God for every day of the calendar. God says, you tell them that there's just one God. All these other nations were as cruel and as callous as they could be. They would slice your throat as quickly as would. He said, you people let them know that I'm a merciful. Those other nations, the idolatry was a lie, and it produced people that were liars. He said, you let the people know that you belong to a faithful God. He said, you reflect His mercy, His faithfulness, His holiness, His righteousness, and He said, you be a witness for Him to the other peoples of the world that don't know Him, so that through you they might be brought to know Him. Well, the question now comes, if that is our function, if that is the purpose of our existence, to be a witness to the true God, and in New Testament terms, His Son, Jesus Christ, the question that we would ask, what is it that will help us to be that witness? You say it's a tall order. It sure is. It's a big task. Mind you, there's one thing, dear Christians, we would not like to misrepresent God. Sure you would. It would be an awesome thing if any of us so behaved that we gave people a false impression of what God was like. And when they stood before God at the great white throne, they said, God, we knew one of your people that lived at Blue River. And his name was David Gilliland, and we knew him, but we never thought that you were anything like this, because we knew him, and he was supposed to belong to you, and he gave us the wrong impression. I tell you, that'll be a very sad statement if it has to be made. But how are we going to do it? Are there any things that will assist us? Well, that's what these chapters are about. The first thing that will give them great help to be this witness. Maybe just before I mention the first one, I should say this. You notice that in this section of Deuteronomy, old Moses, he was a preacher, you know. He was a preacher. And you know what a preacher loves? A preacher loves people to listen. I don't like to see people sleeping. If you feel like sleeping tonight, I'll tell you, just stand up. And it should help the problem. I'll not be disturbed at all. But it'll help the problem. I don't think you'll sleep when you're standing. But it'll help you to listen, and it'll also give a little bit of interest, additional interest to the meeting. And you notice that in chapter number 5, Moses says in verse 1 of chapter 5, hear! And you hear the old fella standing on the slopes of Nebo, maybe at the lower foothills of the mountain, and he says to a vast multitude, a meeting that was well filled, hear, O Israel, chapter 5. Chapter 6, verse 4, hear, O Israel. Chapter 9, verse 1, hear, O Israel. He says, listen, people, I want you to pay attention. You see, there's one vital thing, dear Christians. If we are going to bear witness to God as we should bear witness, we have to listen to His word. I know that's almost, it almost sounds simplistic. But one of the things that I have a great difficulty with, why we hear so much ministry, and it has very little effect upon our lives, is because we don't really hear it. Now he said, you'll have to listen. I'm becoming convinced. Maybe I'm wrong, but it will take a good deal of evidence to change my mind. I'm becoming convinced that most believers who go wrong, they don't go wrong through ignorance. They go wrong through willfulness. They weren't listening. Or if they were listening, they weren't prepared to do what they heard. Now he says, hear, that ye may learn and keep and do. He said, listen and learn and live. Those are the great three links in these matters of hearing and obeying. Now he says, the first great matter, if you're prepared to listen to me, he said, the first matter that will be a help to you is the light. The light which you people have received from God. Now the whole of chapter 5, that's the chapter, you remember when we were reading this, I said it was the chapter that held the Ten Commandments. And in chapter number 5, if you have your Bible open, read it. If not, you can listen to it. In verse number 2, Moses makes a most remarkable statement. Runs into verse 3 as well. He said, chapter 5, verse 2, the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord made not this covenant with our fathers, but with us, even us, who are all of us here alive this day. The Lord talked with you face to face. That didn't happen at all. That's the very thing that didn't happen. How do you explain that verse? I would have said to Moses, you're talking tommy rot. The Lord, Moses said to these people, he said, look, he said, the Lord made a covenant with you. Not with your fathers, he made it with you. And sure, there wasn't one of them alive at Mount Sinai. God made the covenant with their fathers, not with them. Moses turns it the other way around. He said, when God spoke at Mount Horeb, he wasn't speaking to your fathers, he was speaking to you. And he talked with you face to face. I would say, man, well, the old fellow, you know, he's 120. Even people start to waffle a wee bit in our day long before they get to 120. And preachers can get a little bit out of focus and exaggerate, and they can get carried away, you know, with the euphoria of the occasion. And you say, well, just give the old fella, we'll pray for him. We'll pray for him. Do you need to pray for him? What Moses wanted to tell the people was this, that there was something happened 40 years ago and you're involved in it. And the message that God gave through me before you were born, he said, it's your message. He said, in that marvelous revelation of his presence at Mount Sinai, he said, even though you weren't there, he said, that was for you. And he said, here you are down the line of history, and I want you people to link back. He said, jump across the intervening years and you link back with what God has done in earlier history. And he said, make it your own. It was for you that God gave that revelation. You see, we're in the very same position. There were great days in this dispensation. We weren't there. There were a number of great men that lived at the start of this dispensation, and through those men, God made a special revelation. I'm talking about the 12 apostles and the day of Pentecost, and not just the revelation of Mount Sinai, but the revelation of Mount Calvary. Do you see, if we are going to be able to live for God, we need to step over the intervening centuries and link back. Link back with what happened years before we were born, because it's for us. Apostolic doctrine is relevant to this present day. And Moses really emphasizes to the people, he said, now, you folks are linked with that revelation. You see, that's one of the problems that we are having in our day. People say, well, you know, assembly testimony as we have it in the New Testament doesn't work in our day. We live in a different culture. We live in a different century. We have moved down the line of time. We find ourselves surrounded by an era of sophistication. And those simple things that they had in those days, they really don't work anymore. And we need to readapt them, and we need to remodel them. And in fact, we need to forget about them altogether and to reconstruct our own idea of testimony. Now that's disastrous. Moses says you need to get back to the original. He says, what God gave me in Horeb hasn't changed. And he said, even though you had not seen with your eyeballs the light of the grey sky of Sinai, he said, that was for you. I wasn't there on Pentecost, dear Christians, neither were you, but that was for us. And I wasn't there the first day that a man stood up in the city of Corinth and he read the first epistle to the Corinthians from the pen of Paul. I was not there, neither were you, but remember, that was for us. We need to link back with God's original revelation at the start of the dispensation, because that was the start of the dispensation of law. And we need to go back to the very beginnings of the dispensation of